What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. As always, I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And as always, you can find the show on any podcast app like Himalaya, the wonderful new podcast app, or you can always ask your smart device like Siri or Amazon Alexa to play podcast Locked On Vikings if you don't want to scroll through clunky podcast apps. And today, we have some pretty big news, at least it's overshadowing anything else that's going on, which is the release of the NFL schedule. We now know where the Vikings are going to play, when they are going to play, and how many primetime games they have, and when the bye week is, and all that good stuff. So we will dive all the way into that, but first, we do have a daily obligation here on this show leading up to the draft. We are doing a prospect a day, so I'm going to talk about that guy first. So I've spent a lot of time on this show talking about the kind of blue chip, I guess I'll call them, or, you know, the day one top build offensive linemen, you know, the Cody Fords, the Jonah Williamses. I haven't spent as much time talking about the, like, day two guys, because I think what will end up being the day two guys that the Vikings end up actually having access to just don't excite me as much. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to get a chance at, like, Chris Lindstrom in the second round like I see in some mocks. Or, you know, a guy like Elgton Jenkins, I think even he might be a dicey proposition. I think these guys are going to go a lot higher than the 50th pick. So that leaves us with, like, Caleb McGarry, who I have talked about, and Drew Samia, who I'm going to talk about today, as well as a couple other guys from, like, Oklahoma scattered around the draft. And so the first thing I want to talk about with Drew Samia is the fact that he's from Oklahoma, where a whole bunch of really good offensive linemen are from. That's where you get Cody Ford, that's where you get Bobby Evans is another tackle, that's where you get Ben Powers, who is also an interior lineman who goes around this, like, third roundish area, and so you've got a lot of viable draftable offensive linemen there. And I kind of found it really curious that Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman did not go to Oklahoma's pro day. Now, I imagine they sent someone, I don't know for sure, but they probably sent someone. They were just at a different pro day at the time. And that, If we want to read into that, which maybe is an irresponsible thing to do, you know, maybe they thought that they were, like, confident in their evaluations of all the Oklahoma guys and they don't need to go to their pro day to see. But if we did choose to read into it, we would say, like, you know, that not that the Vikings aren't interested in linemen from Oklahoma at all, but more that the linemen from Oklahoma are going to go in a place where the Vikings do not intend to take offensive line. And if you read the rest of their, like, top 30 draft day visits this way, it kind of makes sense. They have met with all of the top build big guys. They've met with Jonah Williams and Andre Dillard and Cody Ford and Garrett Bradbury. They've met with all these guys between the combine and the Senior Bowl and private visits and all that stuff. They have done a ton of work on the big time offensive linemen. And if you were to use that as any kind of tell, it's pretty obvious that the Vikings are going to use their top pick on an offensive lineman, or at least that's the intention as it stands right now, which means that it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to do work on linemen in, like, the third round, right? Because if you drafted, say, Jonah Williams or Cody Ford in the first round, you're not going to turn around in the third round and take another guy. That is something I have seen people, like, want the Vikings to do that, but I highly doubt that they will. They are going to try to go, you know, use that third round pick to take on other, like, third round, like, future needs, things like edge rusher or tight end, holes that might open up in future years, rather than, you know, trying to fill a backup hole and pick a guy that might not even get playing time. I think they want, with those third and fourth round picks, guys that will eventually find their way into the rotation. And I don't think if you took a lineman in the third round, he would, provided you took one in the first round. Now, if you end up going, like, Noah Fant or something different, then all bets are off. But let's, enough about abstract strategy. Let's actually talk about Drew Samia. He comes from the Oklahoma Sooners. He is a very, very good zone fit. He has all that functional athleticism you want. He moves around the way that you want, and he kind of has a ceiling that is higher than his draft stock. And in the third round, you know, those guys, I guess I always call them jocks, but, you know, athletes that are maybe a little raw, but they're just jocks. They're just, like, guys that are gonna be talented enough and have talents that you can use are great third round propositions, because a third rounder is a palatable wager. You know, it's a palatable asset to risk on a guy that's not, like, 100% to pan out, and the ceiling almost always exceeds what you usually expect to get back from a third rounder. So from that angle, I love Drew Samia. Now, he does have some technical issues, and I actually think that they're a little overblown. I see you know, a lot of like hand placement issues get highlighted. I see some slight footwork things get highlighted, but everybody who highlights them kind of qualifies, you know, oh, but it's not drastic and it's something that coaches can fix. And they don't always highlight that. You know, there are some things like if you just don't know how to do a kick step, or if, you know, your footwork, if you have extra steps in your footwork, those are bad habits that you need to like work relentlessly to get out, versus, you know, you could tweak his technique here and there. He could get a little better. Even John Ledyard, who did a profile on him for the Draft Network, said that, like, he does have unconventional, like, footwork things, and he doesn't quite set up his base the way you would like him to, which means that, like, power rushes and bull rushes might actually have, like, a better chance of beating him. But if that were a huge problem for him, you know, you would expect it to hurt him more than it did. So there's kind of two ways to look at Drew Samia. For one, I mean, he's a good player, and if he ends up on the Vikings, I'd be very, very happy with him as a day two pick. He seems like the kind of guy that could come in and maybe have a struggling rookie year, but could eventually develop into like a good guard, and the price is right for that. So there's two ways to kind of look at the whole Oklahoma Pro Day thing. A, the Vikings just aren't interested in these Oklahoma guys. They don't really have the measurables that the Vikings typically look for. They're not really the Vikings, like, quote-unquote type, even though they're good players. You know, the Vikings tend to look elsewhere, so that's one possibility. I wouldn't be thrilled about that. I kind of would want them to be more interested in guys that aren't their type, because, you know, their type has, like, not had a great track record over the last few years. But the other way to look at it is that they didn't need the extra help evaluating. Remember, going to a pro day or bringing in a guy for a meeting is seeking more information. Sometimes you just know. You know, the Vikings didn't bring in Nick Bosa for an evaluation. They already know. There are some players that are just good and or just not very good, and you just kind of know that, and you don't need to bring them in for an interview or use those resources. You generally want to use the resources on guys, you know, like the Vikings went to the Kentucky Pro Day and worked with Derek Beatty, a cornerback who has kind of some ups and downs and some ambiguity about him. The Vikings went and worked with that guy to try to learn about him. I don't know if they need to go watch Drew Samia run a three cone at Oklahoma to know that he's probably good at the three cone. They can just look up the time later. So that's the other way to look at it. But either way, Drew Samia, a guy that I would support. I think that whoever drafts him is going to get a nice workable project that has, you know, enough upside to really justify like a third round pick on him. And ultimately, if the Vikings don't go offensive line in the first round, which I think, again, is unlikely, then he would be a reasonable consolation prize. So that's enough of that. We'll go into the scheduling stuff in a little bit here. I'm going to step away to an ad break, and when we come back, we'll talk all things schedule. Okay, welcome back. So let's talk a little bit about where the Vikings are going to be going during the 2019 season. So we already knew all of these opponents. We have known 14 of 16 of them since 2002, because it's all cyclical. Like, we know, you know, that the Vikings are going to play the NFC East. We know the Vikings are going to play the AFC West. We know that they're going to play all the divisional games. And all that leaves is the two games that are based off of where you ranked in your division, where everybody ranked in their division and stuff. So we're starting with one of those games, actually, against the Atlanta Falcons at home, and then we go to Lambeau for Green Bay. We get the Raiders at home, and then we have to go into Soldier Field. So that is all. There's a lot of favorable stuff in there. For one, starting week one at home is really nice. Starting week one against a team that did not make the playoffs last year is really nice. So, you know, you kind of can get your feet off the ground without immediately being hit in the face by, like, the Seahawks or Chiefs or, you know, one of those, like, really good teams or teams that kind of project to be really good. And it's not, like, a big pivotal divisional game right off the bat. But by week two, you are going to a big pivotal divisional game, and you actually have two in the month of September, but they're both the road games against the Bears and Packers, and they're both well before things get cold. And that really is helpful, because that game, especially the Soldier Field game, has been affected by weather all the time. The Lambeau game has been affected by weather all the time, and most of the time that's because those games tend to be later in the season. The Vikings get the Packers and Bears to end out their season, but that's two back-to-back home games, which is also really nice. You want to get those road games out of the way early, and then, you know, wrapping up the season with two probably very important home games is really, really nice to be able to have those home games when those moments are going to matter so much. So then the Vikings take a little tour through the NFC East. They play the Giants in the Meadowlands, then they get Philly at home, they go to Detroit, and then they get a short week against Washington, but at least they're home against Washington. And that'll be the, you know, a very fun, like, Kirk Cousins, Case Keenum revenge game thing. in prime time. Easy to see why they put that one in prime time. But again, you know, in the month of October, there's nothing really too crazy going on. A lot of NFC East games. Again, very interesting that in the first half of the season, they get all the divisional road games out of the way. So if you can escape that first eight game thing with, you know, 2-1 in those games, or even 3-0 would be amazing in those games, you would be sitting really pretty down the stretch. And I think, you know, if the Vikings can get it together and really put together a nice, you know, back half of the season, like, I think this season will really be decided in that back half, because you're going to have a lot of opportunities to either put the season away or make up ground if you end up getting off to a shaky start. However, going into the bye, things get really, really hard. They have to play at Kansas City and at Dallas. That is the second multi-week road trip, though none of them really consist of like crazy travel or anything like the Vikings had last year, with like traveling on a short week over to Los Angeles and then coming back and then traveling all the way to the East Coast for Philadelphia. That is a pretty ridiculous road trip, and they actually made the Packers do the same thing too, so that's something that you never want to see on your schedule, and we do not have that this year, which is really nice. And then you have a week 12 bye, a little later than you'd typically want it, but not too bad, and that is actually going to be really nice, especially if you're making a playoff push. Then that almost would cut like a deep playoff season directly in half. So that's a really nice time to get your bye, week 12. It's also Thanksgiving weekend, so that's really nice that you can kind of go travel for that and not have to worry about if you're going to miss the game or if you're going to be on a flight or whatever. That's something that I've had to deal with a lot, traveling back and forth to like family for Thanksgiving. So you come off the bye and then you go to a night game against the West Coast against the Seattle Seahawks. And that is a very interesting thing to me, because the Vikings have done a lot of stuff with sleep science. I'll see if I can find an article about this and link it in the show notes. But the Vikings have like really embraced sleep science as a thing that can maybe make their athletes perform better. And that will especially come in handy in games with weird time zone stuff going on, like night games on the West Coast and things like the London game a couple years ago. You know, you can really like navigate that in a way that, you know, you aren't being too badly affected by being out of your own time zone, or, you know, playing a game that starts at 7 p.m. your like local time. That can really throw off your energy levels and like really make it more difficult to like attack a football game with the same tenacity you would if it were like a noon game like you're used to. And so that could be a really big disadvantage. Coming off of the bye should allow the Vikings all of the time they could ever want to apply all of that sleep science stuff that they have like spent so much time and energy like trying to implement into their team. They should have no excuse. And the fact that their night game in the West Coast, or one of their night games in the West Coast, comes after a bye is very fortuitous. Then they get Detroit at home. Then they have to do another night game on the West Coast against the Chargers on Sunday Night Football. But they do get at least a longer week to recover from that. So they get to play the December 23rd game against Green Bay. That's week 16. That's another Monday night game. And then on a semi-short week, they have to go play 12-29 versus Chicago. And that game probably has playoff implications for at least one of these teams. So that is the schedule. Very quickly, a rundown. But let's talk a little bit about some of the trends. And then we're going to talk a little bit about just the idea of like strength of schedule in general, because this is now the time where I'm sure all weekend you're going to be seeing a whole lot of schedule predictions and people running down and saying WWL, WLL, WL, you know, and now I think the team's going to go 10-6 and like really running it down. Again, we've known the opponents for like a long time, so they could have been doing this for a long time, but having the schedule in front of you is a good enough excuse to do that exercise. It is not one that I am going to partake in today. There's going to be plenty of time for schedule predictions after the draft and into the preseason and stuff when we know a little bit more about the team. But, you know, when you look at the schedule, there's a few things you're looking for, because again, we already knew the opponents and the strength of schedule and stuff. So what I'm looking for is there anything about this schedule that pops out as particularly inconvenient or disadvantageous? Things like playing a night game on the West Coast. The Vikings have two. They have two away games on the West Coast. You can't do anything about that. But the fact that they both happen at night is not great luck. At least one of them comes after a bye, though, where you can kind of like adjust your body clock accordingly. I'm a little bit concerned with playing a Monday night game and then turning around on a 6-day week for the week 17 game, that like little stretch. That is going to be a very difficult stretch, and it's probably going to be a really pivotal stretch. That said, there's a lot more good here than bad when you look at it from this angle. You know, that first month, like I talked about, is very, very fortuitous. Getting both the Packers and Bears game, they're going to be tough games, and it's going to be a tough start to the season, but those games have to happen at some point, and having them happen early is probably the best thing, because for one, again, the weather will not be too much of a factor in those games unless, you know, summer weather comes and it starts raining or whatever. But for two, if something were to go wrong and the Vikings were to drop both of those road divisional games, something which can always happen, something which is not all that unlikely in the first place, those will be two very difficult games. You have a lot of season left to make up for it, and you have a couple of easy matchups scattered in between. I think the Oakland home game will be very easy. I don't think Atlanta will be the easiest game. I think, you know, Atlanta is always going to be some level of formidable so long as they have, you know, the Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and a reasonable young core of defenders. I think that is a game that I would probably pick the Vikings to win unless something changes a lot until then, but it will not be like a cupcake. Like, I would be really shocked if the Vikings lost that Week 3 game against Oakland, though. I said the same thing about the Week 3 game against Buffalo last year, and look how that turned out, so what do I know? The Vikings do have two road trips. The schedule makers, I don't think they typically will ever make you do three road games in a row. That's not a very typical move, but having a couple of two-game road trips in a row is something that does pop up a lot. And what I look for there is, you know, travel, and is there anything really ridiculous about them? You know, are you going on a road game and then going to London? Are you going from coast to coast? Are you going to have to bounce around time zones and mess up with, like, your whole body clock? And the answer to all those questions is no. There's nothing really crazy. They got to go to Chicago, and then they got to go to New York. That's not too bad. Then they have a trip to Kansas City. That's not too bad travel-wise, and then a trip to Dallas. Now, a lot of those games are difficult. Those are tough matchups on the road, and those will be tough stretches to win games. But in terms of the information we just learned, like, those games were going to be tough no matter where you put them. But in terms of where you just learned, the order of the games and whether or not they're night games and, like, how they all manifest themselves and what time of year and stuff, all of that, there's no real red flags here. So that's good. That's mostly good news here. Now, the idea of strength of schedule is a whole nother thing. But first, I do want to remind you that you can find this wonderful podcast and any of your favorite Locked On podcasts on the new Himalaya podcasting app. In an ever-expanding world of all kinds of new podcasts, of all the genres and all this volume, it can be tough to keep track of things. So Himalaya will curate playlists for you, and they add new features every day to help you make sense of this wild podcasting world. Go to the App Store, download the Himalaya podcasting app, and subscribe to Locked On Vikings on that app. If you don't like it, it's no big deal. We'll always be on the Google and Apple podcasts and Spotify and Stitcher, all those good places that you would usually find your favorite shows. But it can't hurt to give it a try, right? Okay, let's do a little strength of schedule rant, shall we? Because I've already seen immediately the same thing going around year after year after year, and it is consistently wrong and bad, and it is consistently the dominant narrative about strengths of schedule. And people even put it in, like, a nice-looking chart and, like, really dress up that data and make it look nice, and they go by the win percentage of the previous year of their opponents. You know, the Vikings are playing the Packers, who are 6-9-1, so that's that much win percentage, and add up all the teams and who has the hardest schedule. And there's so many problems with that. It is such a bad way to measure strength of schedule. Like, strength of schedule in concept is something that I don't disagree with, and I actually think is really useful and important. It makes sense to want to know, hey, are the Vikings going to play the hard games or the easy games? You know, when are the hard games and the easy games? And how much harder or easier are their games compared to, say, their division or other teams in their conference? Are they going to have to play a lot of difficult teams? And this is a reasonable question to ask, but we're just so bad at answering it because we rely on win-loss records. There's a bunch of problems with win-loss records as a way to, like, gauge whether or not the team that you played is difficult. And I see it all the time. You know, I see it with a lot of stuff like, oh, so-and-so is, like, 5-24 against teams with winning records or against, like, playoff teams or whatever. And those kinds of things are so crazy because if you think about, like, who should a playoff team be, I think about, like, the 2017 Ravens, who really should have been a playoff team. They were a team in the top six of their conference. They were very much, like, deserved to have a shot in the wild card round, and they get upset by the Bengals in week 17. A really fluky thing happens where they get, you know, almost walked off on, and they end up not making the playoffs, and the Bills come in and get lit up by Blake Bortles, and like that's that. So every team that played the Ravens that year is going to have one less quote-unquote playoff team that they beat. You know, you could look at the 2017 Vikings, an objectively very good team, and say that, oh, well, you know, that Ravens win, that wasn't even a playoff team. But they were a reasonable unit, and the Vikings lit them up like, you know, good teams should do to reasonable teams. So, you know, our measuring stick is off. It's going to mismeasure teams like that. You know, on the other hand, beating the Bills in 2017 was not nearly as big of a feat as beating the Ravens was. But the Bills ended up being the team in the playoffs. But even just like looking in into the individual level, there are so many examples of times where the game did not reward the best team there with the victory. There are weird times when somebody comes in and just plays out of their skull, or a team comes in and doesn't play right. You know, I look at like the Bills-Vikings game. The Bills in 2018 were not a better team than the Vikings in 2018. That game is not going to go that way more than 10 times. That is just silly, but the Bills won that day. And that means the Bills get one more win, and every team that plays the Bills now went against that much quote-unquote harder of a team. But would you really look at that Week 3 game and say that it told you that the Bills are actually better than the Vikings? No, of course not. So this whole measuring stick is really broken. And a measuring stick that looks at things in integers, that is, you know, one win, two win, three win, kind of hampers itself, right? Because maybe there's a team like the Vikings that are between maybe a 7-win team and an 8-win team, or between an 8-win team and a 9-win team, and rounding up or down, especially when it comes to strength of schedule, where you like do that 16 times, can start to really, really apply some like errors. And beyond that, what if you played an 11-5 team and you said, okay, they played an 11-5 team, that's a difficult game on their schedule and it should count toward their strength of schedule. What if that 11-5 team played a big old cupcake schedule, or they were in a crappy division? You know, what if that's that 11-5 team is the Patriots that weren't actually that good in 2018 compared to how they usually are, but they still got 6 free wins against the Jets, Bills, and Dolphins? Do they really count as an 11-5 team? Should they really be treated as, you know, a division winner / Super Bowl contending team? You know, maybe the Patriots aren't the best example, because the answer in that case is yes. But what about a team like, you know, some of those like old Seahawks teams, or I think there was a Panthers team back then that just like beat up on an inferior division, and that is great for them and they deserve to have those wins, but did they deserve to be treated as, oh, they were this total juggernaut opponent because of all of those wins, when in reality those are wins that any average team would get as well? It's not differentiating between, you know, what an average team can accomplish and what a good team can accomplish, because you have to account for, you know, your opponent's opponents and your opponent's opponent's opponents, and you have to do all of that stuff. So Warren Sharp, I'll link some of his work on this in the show notes. He fights this fight every year, and he does all kinds of great work, like compiling better strength of schedule alternatives than win-loss record, things like, you know, using their offensive or defensive production, using things like DVOA, using things like expected points, you know, things that are a little bit more tried and true as like metrics of whether or not a team is good. Because again, the question we're asking here is not a bad one. Are the Vikings playing hard teams, or are they playing easy teams? That's an important thing to do, especially when you're trying to predict the season and put all of those things together. But if you're going to use a metric to answer that question, you better make sure that it's a good one, because otherwise you're just kind of screaming into a void, you're spinning your tires, you're not really doing anything. So that is going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Vikings, a little schedule overview for you. Next week, I'll get this out of the way now. Next week is going to be crazy, because it is the week leading up to the draft. So here's the plan. I am going to do next week like it is a normal week. We will have a Monday show, a Tuesday show, a Wednesday show, and a Thursday show. But as you may be aware, that Thursday is going to be the day of the draft. So that Thursday show will be the last draft previewing that I do, and then the Vikings will ostensibly make a selection on Thursday and add a new Viking. I am going to do a show that I'll record Thursday night and upload on Friday morning about that draft pick, and I'm going to do the same thing for day 2 and the same thing for day 3. So you will get 7 consecutive shows, and then an 8th show recapping the draft as a whole and talking about the undrafted free agents. So that is going to be 8 consecutive shows for you, all about the draft. We are going to be all up in it, and it's going to be great, and I'm very excited to bring you all that content. However, after that, I am going to need a break. So because I basically took the week after the draft, where there's not going to be much happening at all, and shifted it up so that it coincided with the actual draft weekend, I'm going to take those then weekdays off, and there will not be any shows after like the first kind of week in May. And then like that following Monday, we will resume things as normal. I will be nice and rested and recuperated, and we will start all of our season preview stuff, including the Every Man on the Roster series, which I'm very excited about. We'll talk more about that after the draft. But yeah, I just wanted to lay out that plan for you. I'll say it again on Monday's show in case people don't make it all the way to the end of the show, because some people only listen, you know, halfway through and then leave. So I will say it again then, but I just wanted to get that out of the way so that you guys know to expect shows coming after every day in the draft, and then to not be surprised when there's a little break afterwards. So thank you all for bearing with me on that. And again, thank you all so much for listening. Again, I am your host. You can follow me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. You can find the show on the Himalaya podcasting app and anywhere else you find your favorite shows. Or you can just ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. Thank you all so much for hanging out. And as always, Skull.